with anybody. Make you wise up. No make that scam you. This message now from Kuda Microfinance Bank, the bank of the free. Make you download Kuda for Play Store or for App Store to open account. Make you start to enjoy our wolf banking.
I am Simone Cipriani.
And I'm Claire Press.
You are listening to the Ethical Fashion Podcast.
Get ready for another season of the EFI podcast series.
Change starts at the grassroots level from the collective efforts of people.
This Friday at 12:15 to 1 p.m. This series will explore topics relevant today more than ever.
The systems that we live in are operating with 100% efficiency.
Through the voice of African creatives and leaders, hosted by Simone Cipriani and Claire Press, the series explores issues driving the conversation around ethical fashion. The discussions featuring African leaders and creatives range from female power and wildlife conservation to African entrepreneurship. Right here on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Oh boy, check this new La Casera packaging now. Polo say the freshness don't fresh. Me say na lie. The refreshment don't fresh. Now the matter with the set to so.
Eh, bring and make us.
Wait, why now?
Hey, same ultra apple taste. Fresh new label. Ah, the refreshment don't fresh. Enjoy the fresh vibes of La Casera with new colorful, exciting look. Also, the bamba apple taste, no change. Oh, La Casera, I love this drink.
Hey, Rent Money will lend you up to 6 million naira in 24 hours for business or personal needs. So, for loans of up to 6 million naira, visit rentmoney.com or call 0700-5500. Call us now. Our phone lines are open till 11 p.m. Mondays to Fridays. Need money? Rent Money.
99.3 Nigeria Info. Your number one. It's 5 o'clock. The headline news on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Nigeria now has a new acting Inspector General of Police. His Usman Baba, a Deputy Inspector General of Police. Meanwhile, the federal government is assuring Nigerians that the security situation in parts of the country will improve drastically in the days ahead. The Imo State government is investigating Monday's attack on a prison facility and police headquarters in the state capital, while a security consultant, Mike Ejiofor, has berated the former police inspector general, Muhammad Adamu, for blaming members of the indigenous people of Biafra, IPOB, for the attacks in Owerri. The chief of air staff says efforts are still ongoing to recover the crashed NAF Alpha Jet aircraft, which was declared missing on the 31st of March. And today, workers in various sectors have begun indefinite strike actions. They include the Judiciary Staff Union of Nigeria, the Academic Staff Union of Polytechnics, and the workers of the Federal Capital Territory Administration. On the foreign scene, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is urging people to keep getting vaccinated following debate about a potential link between the AstraZeneca jab and blood clots. And finally, North Korea will not be taking part in the Tokyo Olympics this year to protect the country's athletes from COVID-19. Those were the headlines here on 99.3 Nigeria Info. You're listening to Hard Facts. I'm Yvonne Okhaifo.
This is Hard Facts.
Right, welcome back, and it's 99.3 Nigeria Info, and a big discussion we're having this afternoon is one which is going to go in different directions. No thanks to, well, depends on what side of the divide you fall in, to what has happened in the last last 2 hours or thereabout, where the president has approved the appointment now of DIG Usman Al-Kali Baba as the acting inspector General Police, which takes immediate effect. I was listening to the Minister of Police Affairs a short while ago, Mohammed Megari Dangiyadi, as he briefed State House correspondents about it. And even earlier before that, speaking with Kabir Adamu is a security expert and a good friend also too, and an expert in these matters. Great to have you, Kabir Adamu, join us this afternoon on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Excellent. And how is Abuja?
Cool and I would say calm in security balance. Nothing major to worry about. So we are cool and calm.
Right. Better to be cool and calm than raucous, like we found out in the last couple of days in the southeast, where we're going to focus on. Remember, you can join the conversation on 99.3 Nigeria Info on Twitter at 99.3 Nigeria Info FM, as well as hashtag Nigeria Info HF, and also our Obo handle. You can also questions and comments on WhatsApp 08095975805. Just some more information for those of you who are asking about the acting Inspector General of Police, who was promoted to the rank of DIG just December last year. He was in charge of the Force Criminal Investigations Department. He holds a master's degree in public administration and a Bachelor of Administration Education degree in political science, a fellow of the National Defense College, and a member of the International Association of Chiefs of Police. He's attended several professional courses and workshops from Yobe State. He's also held several strategic positions in the country, as well as in the police, rather, which include AIG in charge of Zone 5 in Benin, Zone 4 in Makurdi, Zone 7 in Abuja. He's also been Commissioner of Police in charge of the Federal Capital Territory in Abuja. Rich resume. He's also served as an acting DIG in charge of Force Finance and Administration, as well as the Force Secretary. Kabir Adamu, before we get into the Southeast, interestingly, the now outgone Inspector General of Police. But before we go there, I think we now have the audio track of Mohammed Megari Dangiyadi as he made the announcement. So let's listen to this, Kabir. Then I would come back and get your reactions to this story, and we move into the Southeast. All right, just try and fix that shortly. All right, so we have it now.
Present to the Chief, the Security Architecture of the country, to ensure that security challenges bedeviling the nation are brought to an end. Mr. President has therefore charged the new appointee to rise to the challenge to ensure policy and reform policy of this administration are fully prioritized and implemented to enable the police perform most effectively for the peace and security of lives and property of all Nigerians. Mr. President, thanks the outgoing IGP, Mohammed Abubakar Adamu, for his professionalism and dedication to duty during the period of his tenure. He wished him all the best in his future endeavors.
All right, there you have had Mohammed Megari Dangiyadi, who is the Minister of Police Affairs. All right, so Kabir Adamu, this comes to you as a surprise. So because somehow this is also tied to what is also going on, because the outgoing Inspector General of Police currently is in Owerri, the Imo State capital.
Yes, in a way, not exactly, in the sense that the controversies that have surrounded the elongation of the tenure of the, well, now immediate past Inspector General of Police, and the fact that the security situation in the country has unfortunately degenerated. And I must say, in my honest professional opinion, not really because of his fault, the issues are not particular or peculiar to any particular organization. They are systemic issues, and it would be very unfair to single out one organization and blame it for the circumstances. And to that extent, I have the same concern for the incoming Inspector General of Police. He's going to inherit the systemic challenges. He's going to inherit the structure that breeds insecurity, unfortunately, and he'll be forced to respond to this development without necessarily having the authority and wherewithal to address those issues, because they are not law enforcement issues, they are political issues and all that. So to a large extent, I feel in a way sorry for the immediate past Inspector General of Police. He's a brilliant gentleman, one of the, in terms of the pedigree of policemen, one of the best that this country will have in terms of his academic and his professional standing. And unfortunately, we have seen, despite his attempt, his inability to address these huge challenges that have afflicted the country, and almost throughout his tenure, those challenges have come up from time to time. So if history is going to look back at him, history will look back with this single, statement, his inability to address this huge security threats that have afflicted the country.
Ironically, I was just watching visuals of the Inspector General of Police, the now former Inspector General of Police, Inoweri, as he was talking to men and officers of the Nigeria Police, saying, go out and do X, Y, and Z. We're going to make sure things happen. And all of that without most likely... In fact, unlikely that he had any knowledge of this shakeup going to happen. A number of callers have pointed out to me that this does something really, really wrong for the morale of the police officers who probably were accompanying him and going by every single thing he said while on this tour.
Exactly. And I think that this is one of the points that has come up over time. This inability of especially very senior police officers to have an idea of when they are going to depart the service. Some have even hinted at it as being behind the spate of corruption within the system. Of course, it's also, I'm aware of a particular senior ranking police officer who found himself in such a situation. But in his own case, it was more a transfer just before his retirement age that perhaps may have put him in a psychological state of mind that no person who is about to retire should enter. So I think that inability of the police, especially service and commission now, to have a clear pattern of especially both onboarding and offboarding for even the person of the IIG, it speaks largely about how the entire police system is being managed. But then I know others would say, well, it's an appointment, and an appointment can be terminated at any point in time. But then the truth of it is that you want to have at least some level of certainty that would allow you to manage the work or job responsibility you've been, given. That's the only way that perhaps, that psychological burden would not so much be on you.
The psychological burden. And it's also a burden that the new IG and the entire security hierarchy is probably thinking about. What has happened in Imo State? We've had about 24 hours, more than, to sit back and assess the damage and the carnage that has happened in Imo State. From your experience over the years, having seen the Boko Haram terror attacks, from the attacks when it first put itself in the limelight on the police, interestingly, the police headquarters in Abuja then, and you look at what is happening now, the police seem to point fingers at IPOB and ESN, which is a branch of IPOB, from its preliminary investigation being behind what has happened. And they've come out and said, no, we're not involved in this. But away from the politics and, you know, help us understand when you see the caliber of weapons that were used in this attack. What does it tell you as a security expert?
It makes me very worried. That's really, in summary, how I will I'll put this. Worried because these are military-grade weaponry. These are weapons that should not be in the hands of civilians. And they are, as it were, in the hands of non-state actors. And these non-state actors have taken their time to understand how to use them, what in security parlance we call the TTP techniques and the patterns of their deployment. They understand that. They understand what to do to achieve their purpose. That's one. Two, I also was able to deduce that to a larger extent, this group undertook a very extensive, as it were, surveillance and pre-attack operation, where they were able to study the two locations, understand the kind of responses that they were likely to encounter, and so they came prepared with that type of heavy weaponry. So clearly demonstrating that this is an attack against the state and its coercive instruments, and that is meant to send a message, a political message, that we are ready and we are coming, and what that goal, whatever goal is, it may be, as some would have said, the president has used the word terrorism, others have used the word secession, that, you know, that is sort of an objective that this group, whenever they want to, they can go for it. The second message is, there is this proverb in the northern part of the country, in Hausa, that you chew a stone in order to warn, you know, the other fruit that is in your mouth. So, in other words, if they are attacking hard targets that are supposed to be protected, what of soft targets like politicians and other individuals in the state who may want to oppose their action? They know that, you know, there's no level of protection that would prevent them if they want to get at them. So, yes, very worried, really, demonstrating to me that an insurrection is about to start, and that this insurrection is perhaps being implemented by very organized and very determined group.
You know, for many years, we've talked about intelligence gathering, and the intelligence gathering has moved now to an assessment of what sort of intelligence we've been able to gather, to intelligence failure from the Chibok incident and many other incidents over the years that has shown huge gaps in the way our security in the country happens. Not just in the Southeast, all across the country, we've seen this happened over and over again, where attacks will go on for hours and there will be no intervention from state actors. What would you say in terms of, we know that the government in 2009, after Boko Haram disappeared, when they were chased away, looked the other way and didn't realize that something was happening underground until the attacks happened at the police headquarters and the UN regional office in Abuja, and a series of attacks happened. And the profile of that group till today has been catch up with the way security operatives have been going against them. The same thing is happening with the bandits. They've moved away from petty crimes towards kidnapping and the same use of high caliber weapons. Now, this group that is behind this, while the initial investigation, according to the police, points to a pub or the ESN, or maybe some other unknown group, would you call it a failure, even if it's IPOB, not to realize how the dynamics has changed so quickly from a group probably was using, you know, small weapons, not even sophisticated, towards using RPGs and military-grade weapons? What happened to intelligence in your thinking?
So a couple of things. The reality is that in the last few years, the intelligence capabilities of the Nigerian state has weakened. We're not really sure why that has happened. However, we know that it's the consequence of the weakening of the intelligence capabilities have become obvious. One of them is the scenario you just painted, where they say if teaching time saves nine, small issues emerge, they are not managed, and then before you know it, they become huge issues that are threatening the state, as it were. Then other issues that are not so major, but that may have been hijacked by anarchists. A good example is the NSAS protest. We saw how the state was caught off guard without really having a hint on what was happening. And I've tried to analyze this to ask critical questions why. So number one, the main sources of intelligence generation are basically two, even though you can spread that into a couple of other factors. But you have human, which is human intelligence, where you use humans to generate intelligence. Then you have techint, which is technical intelligence. Now, there are, like I said, there are several variants of this. You could have SIGINT, which is signal intelligence, and name them. All of them can be subsumed under these two that I mentioned. But in today's world, you have the cyberspace, where a lot of the traffic, in fact, the traffic in the cyberspace is more than the traffic in the human world, as it were, if I use that word. If you separate the physical world, where you and I exist, and the cyberspace, the traffic in the cyberspace is more than in the human world. So you could have volumes of information that is almost impossible for the human mind to process, which is why the computer became the easiest way to process information. And then in today's world, you also have AI to now help process that information. So my understanding is that the Nigerian intelligence community has found itself, as it were, in the backseat and unable to take advantage of modern technology, including things like AI. And so you've got the web where you and I operate.
Right.
You've got the dark web or the deep web.
Right.
And unfortunately, a lot of security issues happen in the dark web and deep web. And for you to be able to be effective in today's modern world, you have to have that capability to harvest intelligence in the cyberspace. And I think that is unfortunately where we're failing. The third point is also the issue of corruption. Nigeria does not manufacture high caliber weapons. Almost all the high caliber weapons we saw that was used by the attackers were imported. Now, how were they imported? Two or three possibilities: land borders, through the sea, or through our airport. How many times have we seen an attempt to import weapons through the airport and then the customs would sometimes arrest them? But you never hear of prosecution. You never hear of in-depth investigation to find out where the sources of these weapons are and then blocking them. Because you have to be proactive. When you get such a case, you go deep down, find out if it's a one-off case or it's a ring or a network that is a gun-running network that has been exploiting gaps in our security architecture to bring in weapons. So that you block those gaps and then you reduce the inflow of weapons. But just to conclude, I just recently concluded a study. And my study indicated there are about 6.5 million small arms and light weapons in circulation in Nigeria. And that out of these 6.5 small arms and light weapons, only about 600,000 is in the hands of the security agencies.
Now, because only 600,000.
Yes, only about 600,000. So that means about 5.something million is in the hands of non-state actors. Now you can categorize those non-state actors as those that were licensed and those that have not been licensed. And I can bet you those that are licensed can probably not be up to 500,000. So give or take, there are about 5 million small arms and light weapons in circulation in the hands of non-state actors. And that is the reality that the Nigerian state is facing. And that we are not dealing with assiduously like we should deal with. If we are going to move forward, that is one critical area we need to look into. Attempt to, as it were, eradicate or control the small arms and light weapons that are in the hands of non-state actors and other individuals and groups that should not have them.
I see the light bulbs popping up everywhere, and we try to get an understanding of what is happening here. In case you just join on 99.3 Nigerian Phone Hard Fact, we have Kabiru Adamu, who is a security expert And we're looking at the security implications of the attack that happened in Imo State, audacious attack on the correctional facility, which saw at least 1,800 people freed, and police headquarters where it's happened. I was trying to look for the statement put out by the police hierarchy yesterday following these attacks in terms of what the investigations are, but I'll find that shortly. But Kabir, when you think about this important thing, I was trying to remember here. Good. When you think about all that has played out, and then they're asking questions about how we can move from the agricultural manual way of investigation and crime detection towards the sophisticated, you mentioned the criminals are using things like the dark web and they're online, you know, putting out a lot of things in how they plan all of these deadly attacks. What would you say? I read a piece you put out some time back saying it is impossible to have the military in 36 states of the country and the FCT. Now they're deploying more troops to the southeast in response to what has happened. How far can we stretch this as the option in dealing with this sort of problems when they happen?
The truth of it is security is not the prerequisite, as it were, of the military. Yes, the military is more or less the lead agency when it comes to defense, but especially internal security, I think it's a misnomer that in Nigeria we look at the military to handle internal security. So that's the first thing, and it's a product, unfortunately, of our military history, really, of military rule, to the extent that today we have woken up and we are seeing the military as being responsible for internal security. And unfortunately, even given the fact that we spent almost about 10 years in the Fourth Republic, that is yet to be changed. And I think that, if you ask me, that's the number one thing that we should change. Now, to change that would require for us to understand the role of each and of the 27 ministries, departments and agencies, including the military, that is involved in security. Each of them has a role. We're talking of small arms and light weapons. More or less, it's the responsibility of both the customs and immigration before you even talk of the police, because the police is when these weapons are into the country. While they're outside the country, it's the responsibility, as it were, of the this internal security department to take care of them. But today, everybody talks about the military. And I think the major challenge, as far as I can see it, is for us to understand the coordination element that is required in every security, national security arrangement. We can talk about the role of the military, talk about the police, but if they are not coordinated, then unfortunately we'll never get what we want. There is a UN recommendation with regards to the police. I hear people saying that the police does not have enough personnel. I don't believe in that. For my point, when I always say that, is we need to bring the road safety, we need to bring the civil defense, name them, all of them together. It is when we bring them that will now understand whether these personnel or not are short. If we look at the police only as a single unit without considering the other 27, then they will always be short. But if they are coordinated and cooperating together, working towards the same goal, which is the protection of the Nigerian, then you find out that they are probably overstaffed.
All right, Kabir Adamu, we're going to go on a short break. I'm going to crave your indulgence. Break's about 8-9 minutes. And maybe quickly grab a cup of coffee or soda. And then if you've got questions for Kabir Adamu, I see some questions on WhatsApp. 0809-597-5805. You can put all the questions, the comments, and a couple of more questions when we come back. And then let's see what we can make. If we can understand what the implications of this attack in Imo State means for the entire country.
Welcome back to your number one talk news and sports station. This is Nigeria in
the Vote. This is Hard Facts.
Oh. All right, welcome back, and this for the home run. Kabir Adamu, security expert, still here with us. Kabiru.
Yep, hello.
Excellent. I hope you're able to get something to cool off. It's pretty hot in Lagos here. I don't know what the weather is like in Abuja.
Uh, I think it's warmer here. Honestly, I can't remember when last Abuja was this warm. Incredible.
Let's say we swap places quickly. All right. Yes, so big discussion we're having here, and I see a number of comments coming in on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM, hashtag Nigeria Info HF. And I also see on WhatsApp 0809-597-5805. Again, 0809-597-5805. Don't worry, I'm not lionizing this conversation. I'm going to take your questions. I see you, Tony, from Birmingham, Alabama. And then I will open the phone lines at some point, maybe engage Kabiru with the audience to get the feel of the... we get a lot of listeners, majorly in Lagos, but they also listeners from outside Lagos. But it would be good to have some of the Lagos hospitality too, Kabiru. So Tony from Alabama says, good afternoon. I'm the guest in the house. I want to ask him from his professional point of view. Does he believe that IPOB will be the brain behind the attacks on the correctional facility and the police command headquarters in Imo State? Thanks in advance in the hope. Yes, your question has been asked. I don't know if Kabiru... you think it was too early for the police hierarchy to say they already had their finger on who was behind this, or you think it's standard practice?
The truth of it is, not too long ago, there was a raid in some locations in Imo State, specifically in Owerri, where there was an armed conflict, as it were, between members of this IPOP and the Eastern Security Network and the security forces. So that's one. That is a clear indication that they are cells of the Eastern Security Network that are active in Imo State. Number two is statements that have come out from political players within the state have indicated their concern regarding the growing influence and, as it were, threat of the Eastern Security Network. And then, of course, we're also aware that even the federal government has issued certain statements indicating that they are aware of the activities of the Eastern Security Network. So to that extent, I'm not surprised that the Inspector General of Police, the immediate past, and the presidency has already fingered the Eastern Security Network and IPOP as being behind the attack. Now, the obvious question is, if they had all of that knowledge, why did they allow this group to grow and, you know, to even have the ability to carry out the kind of attack they carried out? We've touched this in our earlier discussion, but for the sake of those who didn't hear, I'll quickly mention. Yeah. Unfortunately, the Nigerian security architecture has become not so effective, as it were, in managing threats. These threats are seen when they are small, and then they are allowed to become big. And unfortunately, when they are big, they now become a bit too difficult to manage, just like the monster. And I think that's exactly what happened in the case of this Eastern Security Network. Anyone who is in Nigeria and has been monitoring development would have seen on social media and several other platforms how this group has put out pictures showing that it's training its members and that it's training is military-style training. So that is when the intelligence agency should have taken action to identify who these group members are, who was funding them, who is arming them, who is even delivering the training and all that. Unfortunately, that didn't happen.
And it's the case we found out in many parts of the country. But there are fears that this may not be a one-off because of... I mean, people don't use this sort of weapons if they're going out for, let's say, a picnic. I mean, this looks like a long, drawn-out thought process on what they intend to do. Neighboring Abia State put out a notice saying they was declaring a curfew because of fears of maybe contagion. Well, what do you think? You think there's a fear that this sort of things could happen on a regular, or this probably is just a one-off?
The truth of it is that if this is allowed, it's like they have taken a bite and they have now seen the effect of the bite. The country, for the past 48 hours, one single topic of discussion has been that issue. So right. any group that wants that kind of attention, frankly, it has gotten their attention. And so it's absolutely necessary. And I think we don't have a choice
right.
but for the Nigerian state to send a strong message by right. identifying both the operational members as well as those that are, you know, supporting them either directly or indirectly, and then bringing them to, you know, to book. And that should not be by sweeping statements like the type that Immediate Fast IG did. It's rather by gathering evidence, arresting them, presenting them before courts of law.
Right.
And to that extent, not just the seeming insurrection that is happening in the Southeast, in right. almost all the other security threats across the country. That is what is needed. Gather evidence, present the perpetrators, the suspects, in a competent court of law, present those evidence to the judges, and then allow the judges to now decide if, for instance, we're accusing this group of under the terrorism law, then what does the law say? Who has the final mandate to take action on that? Is it the Office of the Attorney General of the Federation? What role should the police play in that? So these are all the kind of things that I hope to see. And once we do it, then maybe we would be able to put at least a stop to the spread of this contagion that we're seeing in the Southeast. If we don't do that and continue along the line of what we're doing, deploying security forces and not a systemic approach to it with of investigation and other things, then unfortunately, you know, we will not make any significant progress.
You know, and while we talk about this on the sidelines, we hear a lot of things also to offline, online. Perceptions are very strong, even when many times they are misconstrued and simply bother around just idiocy and conspiracy theories, but you hear things sometimes that causes you to pause and think just where exactly we are headed as a nation. I know you wouldn't like to mix many times politics with security, but politics oftentimes has come into, I think you did mention as one of the factors also too that has made this whole thing get more complex than it is many times. Obeta Joseph from Shasha says that your guest Adamu has spoken well, but I want to know if inequality is not among the causes of insecurity in the country. I tie that with something from Okweke Ndeni Jegun, who says that is the politicians that protect. I'm trying to read this Okweke Ndeni's message, but there's a problem when it's written in this way. And so he says that, my name is Okweke Ndeni. Ask your guests who controls all our security agencies. It's the politicians. They're the ones who protect their paymaster. 8 out of 10 got their job through slots. Okay, he's asked a question and he's responding to the question too. So that's why I guess I got confused. But politics plays a huge role many times. And people don't want to take actions because they probably be criticized by their kinsmen on the one hand. And on the other hand, they could be called ethnic jingoists if they go against a particular group, unfortunately, too.
So, you know, let me sort of give a general overview of where I stand on this without necessarily answering directly the question. Yes, there is a correlation between bad politics and insecurity, a positive one, unfortunately. The more terrible the politics is, the more you are likely to see an increase in insecurity.
Right.
Now, anyone who has seen the releases, my consultancy release, would realize that one of the key elements we focus on is the perception and the reality of marginalization. Now, those are two things. You can stand and perceive that you are being marginalized. Now, it may not be real that you are being marginalized. Then it may be real, too, that you are being marginalized. Now, the consequence of both are the same. Whether it is true or not, as long as you have that perception, then you are likely to seek for ways to sabotage the state because you believe the state is not fair against you. So that this is playing a key role in the Southeast. There is an overwhelming perception that the Nigerian state has not been fair to the Southeast. They point to issues like having only 5 states when the other regions have 6 states. They point to the fact that they've never produced a president since it, in all the republics that we've had anyway, apart from the First Republic, when a prominent member of that part of the country played a key role. But beyond that, that perception is deeply embedded in the majority of residents and persons from the Southeast. Now, is that perception real? When you sit with analysts, some would just, tell some of this perception has not been real. As an example, some would say the reason why there are five states in the Southeast is because of land space, not because someone really wanted to just give the Southeast five states, as it were. So, but the reality is that that perception is leading to a lot of security challenges, and therein lies the role of politics. So back to the earlier question asked by one of the listeners,
right,
when he says, is it IPOP that carried out the attack? Now, the answer may be yes. But did IPOP carry it to achieve their own objectives, or were they wittingly or unwittingly engineered by perhaps someone in the background to carry out the attack? The possibility is there. There is enough fact out there to suggest that there is a split even within IPOP, and that perhaps one of the splinter groups is being led by political forces. The incident that happened in Ebonyi, despite the overwhelming evidence that perhaps it is the herdsmen or Fulanis that were there, there is a suggestion that there is a political angle to it. So that's the kind of situation that we find ourselves, where there is this perception or the reality of marginalization. It allows, unfortunately, for political players to manipulate the situation and create security challenges that will be very difficult for you to understand unless you are able to lift these layers of what look like the obvious reasons. Then beneath those obvious reasons, you will now find the real reasons.
It's a convoluted box, if you ask many people. I will take one call. Maybe we'll take one call as we bring the how time flies when you're having a great discussion. And I told Kabiru Adamu that on radio, time just flies, unlike TV too, you know. But we definitely will get you back in again to look at many of these security issues, because security has been on our minds and probably will be on our mind for a long, long time. Until we get some sort of reprieve, because it's something that continues to bother every single one of us. Mr. Abudu is calling in from Yaba here in Lagos. Hello, Mr. Abudu.
Hello, good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Yeah. And good evening to your guest online. So, hello.
Yes, he can hear you too. Go ahead, please.
All right. So what I want to say is that it is too early for the authorities to assume that it was IPOB or ESN that caused the mayhem in Owerri. You see, because one of the fundamental rules in intelligence work is don't assume anything. You have to investigate first. You know, in a situation, you know, a man and his wife fought yesterday. The next morning, the woman was found dead. The assumption would be, oh, it's the husband that killed her, or they quarreled yesterday. But upon proper investigation, you'll find out that, oh, it was the younger brother that killed her over family property. Or it could be the man she jilted about 3 years ago to marry this present husband that killed her. So without investigation, you would just jump, it was the husband they fought yesterday. So the Inspector General of Police that they sent out, he was very presumptive. It doesn't show any intelligence for him to just jump to the conclusion. He could say it is likely to be IPOB, but we are investigating. But for him to come out categorically to say it was IPOB, it doesn't show any intelligence at all. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Abudu. Kabiru Adamu, you're still there?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, did you get what the caller said, Mr. Abudu?
Unfortunately, no. You may have.
Oh my good. Well, he sort of thought that the police were too quick to jump into conclusions. A number of people I'm seeing are saying that they probably could have said we think they are responsible, not say anything altogether, but just to blame IPOB and ESN. He thought it was premature.
Okay, I mean, what I'm going to tell him is that none of us have the retinue or the pool of intelligence or information that is available to the police. And so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt because I have a fair idea of the kind of information that come their way. And so if for them to make such a categorical statement, it's very likely that they have information that is not privy to the public. Anyway, in a democratic setting, it's absolutely important that they are transparent and make at least some aspects of that information public so that Nigerians are not left in doubt. Already there is a huge distrust between the citizens and the police and other security agencies. So this type of situations don't help them, you know, breach that distrust. Coming out with at least some level of, you know, information to confirm or support the accusation or allegation, I think would help the police in this instance.
All right. Thank you very much, Kabiru Adamu. It's all great pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much, too, for having me.
All right. Thank you. And that brings an end to Hard Fact today. Kabiru Adamu, security expert and a great guy. And this is just the beginning of several conversations we're going to have around security and its implications and across several areas. We have one more thing to do, which is to make someone 10,000 Naira richer. And that will happen just a minute. Forgive the pun. In just a minute, we're going to go on a break and we'll have a winner for today's edition. I hope you had yourself a great time, an opportunity for you to express yourself. I still think we don't talk enough. Keep talking about it until we're able to make a shift, a seismic shift in the system. It may not be seismic, but it will happen eventually when we talk about these issues and we move those who have been elected into office to make those decisions that will make change inevitable. All right, let's go on a quick break. When we come back, for just a minute.